Awesome. Welcome to the Limitless Life podcast. I am Michael Gustin, and I am here with my co-host, Jen Schmidt. Jen, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Michael. I'm so happy to be here. How are you today?
I'm good, and I'm excited for us to continue on the conversations we've been having today. For those of you that don't know, Jen and I work closely together, so we have a lot of conversations about the things that we talk about on this podcast, outside of the podcast. And today, I'm really, really excited to talk to you about the correlation between high achievement syndrome, what we'll call it, and self-sabotage. You know, we talk and we notice, Jen, working with a lot of people who have a lot of high aspirations, but seem to find themselves stuck in moment of decisions, in moment of critical mass, so to speak, where making one decision can be the domino effect for so many other things falling into place. I would love to hear from you. Why do you think we self-sabotage?
You know, I think I can speak best from my experience. I would consider myself now a high achieving person. I am a successful business owner. I run multiple businesses. I'm a mother of children who are succeeding. They're in their teens now. And in my past, I was not a high achieving person. I was not a successful person. I came from a life of dysfunction and trauma and so forth. And as I was going through my, maturation, consciously deciding to be a better me, this is going into my teens, my 20s, my 30s, and even into my 40s, what I can look back on is critical moments. That moment, a decision, and it could be a decision on what I eat, what I finish, what course I enroll in, what I complete, how I parent, all of those things. Often for me, and I know this is true of a lot of people, when I would reach a moment of a breakthrough, stepping into the next level or the next, you know, version of life, I would constantly self-sabotage. And for me, I think it had to do most with feeling like I don't deserve better. I don't deserve better. And not that I'm not capable of better. I think a lot of time it's about self-worth.
Yeah, absolutely. I would tend to agree with you. I think that, you know, thinking about my own experiences where it seems that things have come to a critical mass, that moment of decision, or not even the moment of decision, the moment when you're presented internally with the opportunity to make the decision, you are matched up or at least put face to face with all of the reasons why you can't do whatever it is that you're wanting to do or why you shouldn't or why it's maybe not the best idea in the moment. And yet it always seems to be a part of us that knows deep down that this thing, you know, it needs to happen in some way, shape, or form. And so matching ourselves against those stories, what have you found in those moments of critical mass, especially as you've grown, as you've encountered similar paradigms in higher stakes situations, what have you found has been sort of the best reliever to take yourself out of the either procrastinatory state or the state where you're overwhelmed with the vitriol of limiting stories and moving forward into the direction that you actually know that you need to go?
Yeah, for me, honestly, because I can still get stuck or find myself at a moment where I'm so hyper aware that that's where I'm at. I'm procrastinating something that I know is going to create a better life or a better circumstance even. Right. What I come back to is looking back on those times that I stayed stuck out of my own choice. I mean, it really was my choice, although it may not have felt like it at the time, that I stayed stuck for years, for 10 years in a situation that I could have been free from. I could have been experiencing life in a much different way, except I kept myself stuck due to, I would say at the time, maybe subconscious self-sabotage. But looking back, mm-hmm. I don't know that it was fully subconscious. I think there were elements yeah. of security, because if I do this thing, if I achieve more, what's going to happen to my relationship? What's going to happen to where I live? What's going to happen to this secure sphere that I've built around myself? that feels safe, because I never felt safe, you know, when I was younger. And so what I do now is fall back on, well, if I'm looking to grow, I'm looking to make this change, but I'm consciously choosing to not finish this course or not, you know, commit to doing yoga, which is crucial for me feeling well, right? Why would I not complete this thing that I started? Why did I start it? I started it because I wanted a positive experience, because I'm not enjoying the experience I'm having now. So I think having been through it and being able to look back on my past experiences, I now know that I'm worthy. I know that I deserve any life that I choose to have. And I already know I'm capable of it. But that allows me now to continue that high achieving life and say, I'm just going to do it. Because if I lose the things around me that feel secure, and that will prevent me from having what I desire, then those aren't the things that are for me.
Yeah.
But it's taken me an entire lifetime to get here.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully by us having these conversations, folks won't have to take as long. I think you mentioned something really, really interesting that I think a lot of us, it's just maybe natural human nature due to the body's need to protect itself, is in those moments of high stakes, I think a lot of the times the security of the body, just the fundamental security of the body, being fed, being clothed, being nurtured, a lot of those things, especially for those of us that aren't seasoned in taking these ridiculous dares, so to speak, those tend to be the most heckler of beliefs, of needs, of insinuations, because it feels like, and I think when you get down to the bottom of this, there's a lot of fear around how my current sense of comfortability will shift after making this decision. And so there's something inside of us that says, you know, I know this thing is my next level. I know it's my next step, but I'm fighting against the way everything is now. And I think what's really interesting about that is that when you dive into that fundamentally, when I am afraid of going where I know I need to go because it might manipulate or move around the way things currently are, what that really illuminates is a deep-seated lack of trust in our own self, for one, from an individual level, but also I think a lack of trust in the universe, in the world around us. You know, I think that it's foolish to say that we're not all connected in some way, shape, or form. And it's foolish to say, when you look at the nature of time, that our steps tomorrow are not directly connected to our steps today. And I think something you sort of touched on that has been true for me is this sense of fundamental trust. And I think when we talk about faith, we talk about taking big leaps, it's about that fundamental trust. Because if I am battling between taking a step that I know that's going to bring me closer to where I want to go and the fear of how things are going to change as a result of taking that step, if I have a fundamental sense of trust in myself, then the opportunity or the anticipation of making that decision is all of a sudden filled with a lot less fear and a lot more eagerness, because I know fundamentally that my decisions today are directly connected to my decisions tomorrow and vice versa. We can't escape the quantum nature of time when it comes to full agency over our own decisions, over our own stories, over our own internal battles. And so I think how that relates to self-sabotage is self-sabotage, really interestingly, those moments of self-sabotage are an amazing opportunity to dive into us, into the body, and explore what's happening. And I think for any true high achiever, any true consistent high achiever is not out of touch with their body, is not out of touch with what's going on in here, and understands that to a degree, what's going on in here also happens out here, right?
Yeah. That's just beautiful. And I think to tie it in, you know, coming not just the awareness, but the embodiment of it. So if we're speaking being in the body, how are we embodying this concept
Yeah.
of putting our growth, if that's the track we're on. High achievers are on a track of personal growth, personal development, as well as business growth, business development. The two go hand in hand. They can't be exclusive. There are no high achievers that have sustainable success who are not self-aware and caring for their inner well-being, mental, emotional, as well as physical well-being. That's it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if I were to talk about the most important part of my own journey as a growing entrepreneur and aspiring high achiever, you know, I would say that I would probably invite myself to fail a lot more and try a lot more things. I think that, you know, just like habits are physical, habits are also mental. And if you train yourself enough in high stakes situations to value the possibility of what might occur over the risk of staying where I am, eventually that decision becomes second nature. And I've never thought about it like that, because a lot of people ask me how I'm able to make the types of leaps that I'm able to make. And I think the simple fact is I've made them enough times to where it's just so much more appealing to go with the possible rigmarole of everything that might happen through taking this high stakes decision and running with it, as opposed to staying where I am. And I think for high achievers as well, there's a very keen awareness of stagnation, right? When you feel internally when you are not nurturing yourself to the degree in which you know you need to be nurturing or moving yourself in a direction that you really want to go. I think that, you know, we have a sense of an internal guidance system that I think you could say knows the end from the beginning and is slowly nudging us in these directions. But the quest is for us, I think, to take a full responsibility for the decision-making power that we have, right? Understanding that from a fundamental level, the decision that we make will have a result. It'll have a consequence. It'll have, you know, and we can get into the more ethereal nature of decision-making at a later point, but fundamentally, for every action, there's an equal and or opposite reaction. So when I'm looking at self-sabotage, even if I'm not in a place where I'm feeling, oh yeah, I just want to make this crazy high stakes decision, I think I would advise anybody and everybody to still take that leap, to still take that jump, because even if it doesn't work out, you know, it reminds me of that phrase, shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land among the stars, right? I'm a big proponent of trying to do a lot more than I think I can, because usually we end up meeting our own standards. And if you aim lower than you know you're capable of, the chances are you'll actually hit even lower than that, right? So my logic here is if we strive to aim higher than we think we can go, we will land, if not there, somewhere further than we thought we would go. But that whole dynamic of life does not begin to exist until we become habitually choosing of valuing those high stakes decisions over remaining where we are. And I think you and I both can recall people who are in places of self-sabotage that we both know them enough, their personality, their well-being, to where if they just made that decision, they'd be good. They'd be good, because it's not about anything other than, well, you know, you're not happy where you are. You know, you're not happy, like, and not even happy. Happy is not the right word. Fundamentally satisfied. And you feel deep down that making this decision will help you achieve at least a portion more of that satisfaction. And I think if even that is fundamentally the case when it comes to the war inside of ourselves that shows up in high stakes situations, the value of what might happen, I don't know, it's always worth more than things just staying the way they are, you know? And I think when you look at the universe itself as a living organism, nothing ever stays the same. Nothing ever stays the same. And so we shouldn't expect ourselves to be that, you know, this, like, if you're the same person for 15 years, I question, you know, you shouldn't be. Like, I am not, you know this, I'm completely different than I was a year and a half ago, you know? And I think for high achievers, you mentioned this, there's going to be this almost need to become more, to be more. And it's important to balance what you mentioned earlier, a fundamental sense of adequacy that exists irregardless of my achievements, but also gives me room to continue to dream. And I know we're going to be able to explore more of that as we continue to talk together. So, Jen, I'm curious, if you could give a high achiever or an aspiring high achiever one potent insight for when they are in this moment of knowing they need to do something that will get them where they want to go, but struggling with everything as it is, what would that insight be?
You know, this comes up a lot in a lot of different contexts, but I think my biggest point of clarity here would be to ask, how do you want to experience your life? Yeah. How do you want to experience your life? Yeah. And that comes down to, and just as the people who we know and love who are actively practicing self-sabotage because it keeps them in that comfort zone or that place of security. Similarly, with the high achiever, there's a level of fear of taking the risk, as you know. But right. The thought of taking the risk first comes, that moment of inspiration first comes because we want to experience life differently than we currently are. Yeah. And that's such an individual and intimate thing. It's different for everybody. And it doesn't matter where somebody's level of success is or isn't. It's deeply personal. But if anybody's having the inspiration that, you know, every idea comes to us from inspiration. So if this idea, I'd like my business to look like this, or I'd really like to try that. Or what if I took this crazy risk and, you know, just went balls out and did something? We're having that because we've reached our limit and our capacity, I think, of what is currently fueling us, nurturing us, inspiring us, right? We've tapped out our level of inspiration. And that's when these other ideas come in. Because people who are truly, deeply satisfied, and that's not to mean other people aren't, but at times in my life when I've been deeply satisfied, I wasn't looking for change. I was looking at maybe deepening, you know, what I'm doing at home or on my property or in other projects, but I wasn't looking at going bigger. When I'm looking at going bigger in any area of life or looking at making shifts, it's because I'm no longer inspired with what's happening. And not that there's a problem there, but I think our life container expands and expands and expands. And when we have the idea first and the inspiration, that expands the potential of the container. And then it's up to us to take the action to fill the space that we just created in our thoughts. Does that make sense?
That's so perfect. And I couldn't have said it better. You know, I think that one thing you're touching on here too is the energy behind action. Right. And whether we study Napoleon Hill, Charles Hanel, Neville Goddard, Tony Robbins, whoever, Dean Graziosi, Wallace Wattles, there's a common factuality that the spirit with which action is taken has such an effect on how that action actually tangibly ripples out into the world. And I think this is another thing to be almost inspired by, because when that first moment of inspiration hits, before all the negative stories come up, there is a feeling of infinitude that accompanies it. There's a feeling of expansion that accompanies it. And I'm convinced that if we just allowed ourselves to energetically, emotionally, mentally stay in the space of that initial expansive moment, we would find ourselves with a lot more of a tangible success rate in regards to taking action and high stakes decisions and seeing them through. Because this is not even about, and you touched on this earlier as well, it's not about being successful or not successful. Like, you know, whether you are dealing with self-sabotage or not is not a KPI for success. I'm sure Elon Musk deals with his own mental limiting stories, and I think it'd be foolish to say he doesn't. You know, I think his are probably way more than most of us even realize. You know, and so it's not a measure of success to not be affected by self-sabotage, but it is an effect on your success to not be affected by self-sabotage. You know, and that's where this is at, right? And I think a lot of high achievers, myself included, you would probably agree, it's a lot of the times until we come to a place where we're more understanding of a lot of these power dynamics, it's all or nothing. It's all or nothing. And my identity is tied into that all or nothingness. And this is a really, really, really big point that I think would allow us to remain more emotionally and mentally stable throughout times of uncertainty, is this fundamental sense of adequacy that exists that says, well, whether this action or this decision results in the outcome that I desire, if that's more money, if that's a better relationship, it doesn't fundamentally affect my being. And this is something that, man, I know so many high achievers who stay stuck in self-sabotage fundamentally because their identity is this sense of fragmentation. And I think that there is an opportunity to look at big desires, big aspirations, volumes of processes and systems and success as a shell that we already are, that we get to step into instead of being something that may or may not come to pass. You know, earlier you talked about embodiment, and you and I both know that embodiment is the key to creating lasting change, lasting, tangible, substantial momentum in your life, right? For making a high stakes decision from a place of fear and lack, you can kiss the probability of that outcome being successful goodbye, right? And I believe that our world, our universe honors folks who step up to the plate and are ready to take a bite without becoming overwhelmed and obsessive around fear and what might happen, right? And I think when you look at people who consistently high achieve, that's where they're at. They have come to the conclusion that making this decision, creating this outcome, is more important than not making that decision at all. And fundamentally, it almost always comes down to that. We can get into the psychology of identity, you know, a lot. And as much as I think that's a really big factor in this, you mentioned something earlier about me making the decision and not necessarily knowing what's going to happen, you know, and that being a factor as to why I'm not sure if I should make the decision. And when I'm able to understand that even though I don't know what happens, it's going to result in a different outcome equation. Like if we're looking at this like a math problem, A plus B equals C, A and B have gotten us to the C that we're currently at. But in order to go to F, we have to cross over D and E. And D and E are often completely new variables that we don't often have a lot of experience with, you know? And this is where entrepreneurship, or I mean, I guess you could define this under high achievement, because I think you have high achievers in non-entrepreneur positions as well. But this is more about becoming a type of person, becoming a certain person, rather than getting a new thing or having a new thing or creating an outcome. You know, and I think Jim Rohn said that entrepreneurship is really about personal development. Yeah. You know, your level of success rarely outweighs your level of personal development. And I think that could be exchanged with self-awareness, understanding, emotional intelligence, you know, everything of that nature. What are your thoughts?
I think that's absolutely right. And the willingness to grow. And we cannot grow if we're unwilling to look at those parts of ourselves that are, you know, maybe still deeply wounded, but even the parts of ourselves that we don't like to look at, we need to look at, find those root causes. But whether or not someone's ready to delve that deeply or even has the resources, the willingness to do it. And unless somebody has the willingness to say, okay, I'm going to discover my wholeness, or I'm going to start on the path of healing, none of this is possible. And it's interesting because we can find many examples of, we could say, high achieving people who are fundamentally not healed, haven't gone down the road of self-discovery. Yeah. So that's another interesting aspect to that. But what you'll find, and there's so many, you know, books and literature and so forth on this, there are people who are successful. They have the money, they have the stuff, but they're not happy. they're in terrible relationships, they're, you know, struggling with alcoholism or abuse or, you know, various things. But so that success, true success for the true high achieving human, isn't just about numbers. It's a holistic success, a holistic.
Absolutely.
And I think that's something to really remember.
You nailed it. I think it's really important to remember that, because in all these books of these people that are super successful but haven't done any self-discovery, there's usually a line in there about, man, you know what? I was super unsatisfied, you know, because a lot of these books come out after these high achieving entrepreneurs have their midlife crisis and then say, well, you know, I did a lot of good stuff, but everything I said was wrong, or not necessarily, but like, hey, you know what? It's all good. But until, you know, and how many high achievers do you and I both know that have that story as a central theme? Like, oh yeah, I had the relationship, the money, the cars, the houses, the this, but fundamentally my decisions were not satisfying. I was not satisfied. I was not fulfilled. And all of the things actually end up making everything more complicated. And actually, that's the real irony. So if you're a high achiever listening to this, you don't want to be in the place where you turn X age and you've got everything that you wanted from a material perspective, only to realize that the reasons, your motivations for wanting this in the first place was to supplant a need for fundamental satisfaction that was never found. You know, and if you're listening to this, you can probably count folks off the top of your head, maybe, even if you don't know them personally, that have done a bunch of stuff only to realize that, hey, you know what? All of this was actually pretty much worthless because I wasn't happy. I wasn't satisfied. And this is, I love that you brought this up, Jen, because this is the perpetual balance for high achievers is remaining fundamentally fulfilled while creating even more enhanced, complex, you know, immersive experiences, outcomes, results, decisions, things of that nature. And that's something that I've had to parent myself in, is saying, hey, you know what, Mike, even though this dream isn't fully realized yet, it doesn't have a mark on your fundamental well-being, your worth. And this is a huge problem our society deals with, because you've got your Forbes 30 under 30s and 40 under 40s and 50 under 50s and Fortune 500s and Fortune 10s and best in the state and best in this and keeping up with the Joneses, yada, yada, yada. Our world does not give high achievers permissions to be okay while they're not achieving anything. You know, there's always this fundamental, I need to be doing, I need to be doing, I need to be doing. And what I think you and I have found is that the real momentum in high achievement comes, the real fully immersive, holistic momentum comes when we are traveling and acting from that place of, even if this doesn't play out the way I want it to, I will still be good. I'll still be okay. I'll still be ready to put another equation into place and test its hypothesis. You know, and that I think is the difference between people who truly not just high achieve, but build a legacy for themselves and really something over the course of their life that they're proud of, as opposed to the folks who just don't. Because fundamentally, it's me, and me not succeeding at this means I'm a piece of crap, as opposed to me not succeeding at this gives me more data that I can test, right? And man, what a perspective shift that is, right?
Yeah. Is my worthiness based on all of this external stuff, which could crumble at any time? Or is my worthiness innate and everything external is just external? And that's the fundamental difference, I think, between finding that true level of success.
Yeah. I love it. I totally agree. I think that This is such a major key, you know, especially the man. And I know you're like me. I know a lot of people are out here, you know, since you were 8 years old, going to sleep, dreaming of doing super big things. And I think for a lot of people, especially, you know, folks that we're going to qualify as high achievers, like we talked about earlier, there's a sense of personal identity tied to achievement. And what I've noticed and what you've noticed, I know you've noticed, is that the less my identity becomes, or I should say not becomes, the less my identity is tied to achievement or a lack thereof, and carries a fundamental baseline that exists irregardless of what I do, the higher the chance, the higher the probability that I'm going to step into a place where I'm creating from a truly satisfied place. Because when I'm not looking to be right, when I don't need to be right, when I don't need to be successful, when I don't need to eat food, when I don't need to have sex, when I don't need to do all of these things, my decision-making processes are not driven by the body's fight or flight. But when they come from, hey, I can do this, I can have this, and whether I do it or I don't do it, or I have it or I don't have it, I'm fundamentally okay. Our decisions are made so differently. You know, it's absolutely amazing. And so another thing that I think there's room to touch on throughout our series together is how much of my identity, and you just said it perfectly, is tied to my abilities, my seeming abilities to achieve. And I think from there we can go into connectedness, fields of the body, action, its psychology, everything of that nature. But I'll tell you this, for those that struggle with self-sabotage, if you could say one thing and one thing only, one sentence, what would it be?
Nothing like being on the spot, Michael. one sentence for dealing with self-sabotage. I want to come back to what I said. How do you want to experience life? I know I already said that, and I'll come up with something different, but it's going to be the same thing wrapped in different words. It's worth it. It's worth it, and you're worth it. How do you want to experience your life? And that's really it, because you, the collective you, are the only one in charge of how you experience your life. It's a choice. It's your choice. No one else has really control over that. And a lot of times it's those little moment-to-moment choices, you know, when we're moving out of a situation into a new situation. Sometimes it's big decisions, but I don't have anything new, because I think that's at the core. How do you ultimately want to experience life? And then, okay, I don't want to do that thing that I started. Well, then you're going to experience life exactly as you are. And that's fine if that's what you want. But fundamentally, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And what I want to leave us with is preparation for our next episode, where we really are going to dive into not only the psychology of action and where it comes from, but ultimately, you know, what it looks like to not just be a high achiever that consistently creates good results, but ultimately what it means and what it looks like, what the active lifestyle internally and externally of a high achiever looks like, that is maybe not necessarily building and selling $100 million startups, but is moving on their path with a sense of consistency, but also balancing a sense of surrender. That is something that I'm really excited to talk about, but I'm really grateful that we got to talk about this today. Jen, every time we get together, it's gorgeous. And I'm just grateful for all of our listeners. If you've been listening and this has affected you, please feel free to check out our Instagram account at Reality Hacker Co. Feel free to leave us a message here. There should be a voice message link for you in the description. We'd be happy to share you in the next call. Super grateful for you listening in. Any questions, reach out to us. This has been the Limitless Life Podcast with Michael Gustin and Jen Schmidt, and I am super grateful, and we will talk to you next time.
Super grateful. Thanks, Michael.